It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Bill Hemmer.
I'm Janice Dean.
I'm Juan Williams, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, December 28th, 2022. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. Most of the country experienced the Christmas weekend storm, but not quite like Buffalo did, where multiple people were killed in blizzard conditions that lasted days.
Buffalo is a city where, well, they're used to storms. You know, snowstorms are no real big deal here. These are tough folks here. But this was, as people have been telling me, really the storm of a lifetime.
I'm Lisa Brady. More books are being banned in schools across America.
Communities are very different, and communities need to have these discussions on what's appropriate for the children in their community.
But libraries are worried about the big picture.
Certainly, there will always be books on the shelf that you might not agree with as a parent, as an individual, but they're there for someone else.
And I'm Dr. Rebecca Grant. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul said the storm that hit the western part of her state over the weekend especially hard was one for the ages. Maybe, she said, the storm of the century.
We had over 550 rescues transporting people all over, people from out of town who had no idea what they're in for. It's extraordinary.
On Monday, she announced the National Guard had been called in to help with the search for people. Feet of snow and iced in conditions trapped people in homes, but also cars, after they were stranded on roadways in some cases. As of midday Tuesday, 35 people had been killed in Erie and Niagara counties. But Buffalo Police Commissioner Joseph Grimaglia said the number of deaths would likely go higher.
As the snow begins to get moved, and as we see in the week when the snow starts to melt, we fully expect that we are going to recover more bodies. We're pretty certain that there's going to be more deaths uncovered that we just cannot see at this point.
Erie County Executive Director Mark Pullencar said Tuesday roads were still impassable throughout the city of Buffalo.
Please, you heard the mayor beg. I'm begging. Stay home.
The mayor of Buffalo had noted earlier in the week that even in these conditions, incidents of looting at retail locations were reported, as most people were hunkered down for days.
So as far as snowfall totals are concerned, we have over 4 feet of snow in some places. Wind gusts were upwards of 70, nearing 80 miles per hour at the peak of the storm.
Max Gordon is a Fox weather correspondent in Buffalo, New York.
And really, the amount of snow that we received here in Buffalo, that's not necessarily the most dangerous thing that occurred. Really, we had so much storm, just such a long duration storm. It started Friday morning, and really, we're still seeing some snow here in Buffalo. We could receive a few more inches. So as far as just what it's like out there, there's still some neighborhoods that they have a lot of snow. Roads are still unplowed in many areas. Driving bans are still in effect in some areas, especially in downtown Buffalo, where, you know, officials have struggled to get the roads plowed. Essentially, you can't even plow some of this snow. They need tractors to come in to get bucketfuls of snow and bring it out that way. Mm. So really, this is a city that's been paralyzed by this storm.
How cold did it get, too?
Well, the wind chill dropped into the negatives. It got very, very cold. I think the coldest that I got personally was Friday along the shores of Lake Erie. We were there in the town of Hamburg, and we were seeing these massive waves slamming into the shore, 14, 18-foot waves. Wow. And we were next to this restaurant called Hoax Lakeside. And this restaurant, you've probably seen pictures of it. It now looks like a piece of art. It's covered in ice, literally just coated. You couldn't get inside in some places because, you know, you wouldn't be able to open the door because there's about 4 inches thick of ice. It looks like almost, it's like a wax building and it's begun to melt. That's kind of the picture. And so while we were standing there doing our live shots, spray from Lake Erie would be just washing over us and it would freeze on us. And so, you know, at times when I would try to jump into the car just to get warm between live shots, I was just crunching and I was just crackling as this ice was sort of breaking loose all over my body. And wow. Gosh, I can tell you what, that was really, really cold. That combined with the wind that was whipping upwards of 70 miles per hour. Gosh, I was freezing.
We heard from Governor Hochul, I think the quote was, this storm was one for the ages. Maybe even, yeah. She said, the storm of the century. I know there have been some comparisons of this blizzard to, I think it was a prior storm in, what, 77? Or like, how mm-hmm. what do we know about if this was really, the one for the ages?
Well, I've been speaking to locals here, people who have lived here all their lives, and they say that they have never seen a storm this bad hit Buffalo. I believe back in 77, there was a very strong snowstorm that hit the area. And, a lot of people died similar to this situation. But people here say they really haven't seen a snowstorm last as long as this one did. And really, I keep sort of pounding on this, but it's the duration of this snowstorm that really paralyzed the city. People simply couldn't get out. They couldn't go to the store and get food. People were stranded in their homes and sometimes with no electricity. The power outages, that was a huge issue here because we had trees going on into lines. We had lines coated with ice. We had power lines going down in these high winds. And power crews, they really couldn't do anything when the storm was just raging at its peak. So only now have they been able to get out onto the streets and really assess all the damage. There's still thousands of people here that are without power. That has slowly gotten better, hour by hour. And it's an evolving situation. But, people likely won't have, everyone won't have power until about 11:30 p.m. Wednesday. So it's going to be a bit of time before the lights come back on.
We heard around the country other people were killed in this storm, mostly in car accidents. Though I think a woman fell through the river ice in Wisconsin. There was mm-hmm. a falling tree branch that killed someone. Was Buffalo like the only place, though, that we've really heard of people being literally trapped in their homes and especially in their cars to the point where, sadly, people died in their cars?
Yeah, that was a huge issue with this storm. A lot of people were stranded in their cars, a lot of people stranded in homes. I believe the latest death count is 35 people just here in Erie County. That's not counting other parts of the country and other parts of New York State. But, the various ways people died, unfortunately, people were found in snowbanks. They were out walking. They're out trying to get somewhere and they might have gotten lost. You at times could not see 10 feet in front of you. People died in their cars. There's multiple issues that occur when you try to weather a storm inside your vehicle. You could suffer carbon monoxide poisoning if your tailpipe gets clogged up with snow. If you run out of gas, you could die of exposure. You could freeze to death. And then there were people who were in their homes and first responders simply could not make it out to them. The roads were too rough. Conditions were such that first responders simply could not see. And we experienced those conditions for ourselves. My photographer, Raphael, and I, on Friday, when we're trying to make our way from just south of downtown Buffalo, it's only about 10 miles down there in the town of Hamburg, we're trying to make our way back up here. And it got so late and the storm got so intense that we had to pull off into a parking lot and we spent the night in our cars because you were driving along. And this was a main route, Route 5. It just goes straight from Hamburg right up to downtown Buffalo. And we were driving along and you couldn't tell where the road was. You simply couldn't tell. And so Raphael and I were just following each other in our separate vehicles real, real closely. And it got to a point where it was just too unsafe. And there was several tractor trailer trucks that had just become stranded. They had just stopped and they were blocking the roadway. There's no way for us to get around. We could get just stuck either way. And we figured, there's a parking lot right here. Let's pull on in. And so that's what we did. We spent the night in our vehicles.
Wow.
Unfortunately, we experienced a little bit of an issue that night. We pulled into a hotel. I'm not going to name the type of hotel. I don't know what was going on here, but they were not letting people in. The lobby was empty and there were people in the parking lot asking to come in and they wouldn't let anybody in. So we We hunkered down in the parking lot of this hotel, ran our engines all night, just woke up every few hours to make sure that our tailpipes weren't clogged. But it was not a great situation. But at the end of the day, though, it wasn't about us. We chose to come here. There was a lot of people out there who were just hit with this storm. They didn't choose to be in it. And, you know, unfortunately, there's many, many deaths because of it.
The fact that you lived the story with them is obviously significant.
It puts things in perspective, and you know, it makes you see the storm through a lens that maybe you wouldn't see it if you were able to stay in a nice cushy hotel the entire time. You know, I think, you know, we learned some things about, you know, when we need to cut loose from live shots, when we need to maybe get out of there. But you know, luckily I'm just thankful that we're both safe and we're alive, because it could have been a pretty dangerous situation there.
Max, we've gotten used to weather reports being more accurate over the years, with really, I guess, stunning technology now available to us. Were people in Buffalo caught off guard by this? I mean, the fact that they were out in their cars. I know Governor Hochul said some of those rescued were visiting from out of town, but were some folks just not quite expecting this level?
You know, I can't say for sure why some people got caught up. I think there's maybe two reasons why we saw what we saw here in Buffalo. One, this of course occurred during the very busy Christmas travel season, right? So a lot of the people that I spoke to who were stranded, they're trying to get from point A to point B. They were passing through Buffalo. They weren't trying to be stranded here. But they did. And you know, it just all kind of depended on timing, where they were when this storm hit, you know, where they were in their travels. And then also, Buffalo is a city where, well, they're used to storms. You know, snowstorms are no real big deal here. These are tough folks here. But this was, as people have been telling me, really the storm of a lifetime. This was an incredible snowstorm that hit this city. And there was circumstances that were not normal. So I think those two factors might have contributed to the amount of people that we saw stranded and potentially contributed to the fatalities that we've seen.
Finally, Max, we know that everyone around the country was impacted by this storm. Maybe not everybody, but this was an oddly large storm. I think the National Weather Service had said at one point that it was like 60% of people were in the country were experiencing some effect from this storm. Millions of us were under similar watches and advisories all at the same time. Can you speak about the largeness of this storm and how odd that sort of was for all of us?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible when, you know, so many people are impacted by one single weather event. But I think that just speaks to the intense nature of this storm and how serious it was. I think everyone can kind of relate a little bit to what's going on with one another. And this is unfortunately one of those times when Americans can really kind of identify with each other. And unfortunately, gosh, it came during the busy Christmas travel season. We've got people sleeping in airports, you know, and we've got people who are stuck trying to get where they're trying to go. A very unusual scenario. This is going to be a storm that I think a lot of people don't forget.
That's a really good point. It's unusual to be, you know, in the South or in the Midwest, you know, maybe somewhere else in the country, and you hear about a storm elsewhere. But in this case, you actually were able to say, "Oh, that's the same storm I'm in."
It is. Yeah.
that's an oddity, but of note. Max Gordon, Fox weather correspondent, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
This is Dr. Rebecca Grant with your Fox News commentary coming up.
One of the pandemic's many ripple effects is a groundswell of support for parents' rights and more attention not only to what's being taught in school, but what kids are reading about in school. The nonprofit group PEN America describing a record pace of book banning in the last school year in more than 30 states, also raising concern about a possibly more organized and politically driven effort than just individual parents. We had guests on both sides of the issue join the rundown on September 21st. For libraries across America, this is Banned Books Week, an effort to call attention to censorship with challenges to books on the rise, especially in schools, sometimes led by parents.
It is not your responsibility to worry about moral values. That is the parental right. You are treading on parental rights all over the place, and you are also violating the Constitution.
School board meetings like that one in Mentor, Ohio, continue to be heated forums over what's being taught and kept on the shelf. But a report from the nonprofit PEN America, which describes itself as a free expression group, says there's been a rapid acceleration of censorship, with more than 2,500 book bans during the last school year in 32 states and nearly 140 school districts. The group's CEO calls it a movement that's turning schools into political battlegrounds and often targeting books about LGBTQ issues or racism.
What we saw was the erosion of parental rights.
Tina Deskovich is a former member of the Brevard County School Board in Florida and co-founder of Moms for Liberty.
So our chapters are pretty autonomous on what they want to tackle in their own communities. They hold monthly chapter meetings and they review their local school district, the school board agendas, and we tell them. And so as our chapters are starting to do this, they're finding concerning things. They're finding concerning curriculum, concerning assignments, and they're finding concerning library books in their libraries. And so it's not coordinated from the top down. We don't have master lists of concerning curriculum anywhere or concerning books anywhere. Each chapter locally is finding their own problems.
What kind of books are you most concerned about? Or is it, or as you say, it's really kind of on a case-by-case basis with local districts?
It's on a case-by-case basis, but there is reoccurring themes. You know, a lot is happening now. I don't want to switch topics on you, but with comprehensive sex ed, it really does tie into what we're seeing in a lot of the curriculum. And it's the same scenarios that are happening in some of these that are being found in some of these library books. For example, genderqueer has been very concerning. It's been found on middle school shelves all across the country. That's children as young as 11 and 12 years old. And the book Genderqueer depicts sexual acts, actual graphic drawings of sexual acts between two individuals. And if someone lays eyes on that, I have shared that with so many people when they say, why are you concerned about books in schools? What's the problem? All I do is just open. I'm like, turn to any page, you know? And most parents that I have given that to have been very concerned.
What about the argument that there are, you know, marginalized groups of children, for instance, children with, you know, gender identity issues, who maybe feel as though they need access to this material, or adults around them feel like they should have access to certain materials, at least in the school library, if not in the classroom, so that it can be, you know, a source of comfort or information for them, or that they would be more marginalized if they didn't have access to this? Is there a distinction between what's in the classroom and what maybe could still be available in a school library, bearing in mind, you know, that different ages could be involved, you know, and any distinction between someone who's in high school versus someone who's in elementary school?
Yeah, so the point of Moms for Liberty is to make sure parents are involved in these selections, that parents get together as a community and review and discuss these types of books and where do they want them placed in the school. And I will tell you that sexually explicit material, pornography, and anything of that nature has no place in school. There is no child that needs to identify with pornography or sexually explicit material. I haven't seen any of our chapters that want to get rid of books that help children find characters that they identify with. They are concerned about pornography and sexually explicit material in the classrooms and in the library.
Is there common ground to be found here? You know, something like making books available, but requiring adult permission or adult notification.
Yeah, there's absolutely common ground. You know, I just spoke to what we did here in Brevard. I think every community has to decide. There can be opt-in options. There can be opt-out options. There is, I think, if people want to find a solution and if school districts will listen to parents that have concerns, I think there are solutions to these problems for sure.
A word of caution from Deskovich that there's a lot of misinformation. She says her group is not trying to ban Of Mice and Men, for instance. And she offers reassurance about First Amendment concerns. She says Moms for Liberty is only concerned about material that shouldn't be in front of children and not in a public education environment. But the American Library Association says under its preliminary data, total book challenges this year may exceed last year's record numbers, with more than 1,600 titles targeted so far.
I have done this work for two decades now, and I have never witnessed the volume of challenges that are being reported by library workers and educators to our office on a daily basis.
Deborah Caldwell Stone is the director of the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom.
We might hear from two or three professionals saying that they've gotten a request to reconsider a book a week a few years ago, but now we're getting 4 or 5, sometimes 10 reports a day reporting on demands to censor books, and often on topics that reflect the lives and experiences of groups that are traditionally marginalized in our community: gay, queer, transgender people, persons of color. And it feels very targeted. I don't want to discount individual parents. We still see challenges where an individual parent raises a concern about a book that their young person is reading, and that's entirely appropriate. And in fact, we create methods for parents who have concerns about books to take those concerns to the library professional, to the educator, and to have their concerns addressed in a fashion that respects everyone's right to read and allows everyone to be heard.
So it sounds like it really goes beyond any debate about whether, you know, parents might have a legitimate concern about certain topics like sexuality, maybe feeling they should have more control over that type of narrative in their children's lives. Kind of goes beyond that into, you know, a broader range of things brought into these bans.
Absolutely. We have no problem at all. A parent should have the ability to guide their child's reading. They should have the ability to discuss with library workers, with educators, what their values and choices are, and ask that their young person be provided materials in line with those values and choices. But what we say is that, you know, there's all kinds of families, there's all kinds of parents, there are all kinds of individuals in the community, and that as a public community institution, both public school libraries and public libraries should serve the needs of everyone in the community, which means that certainly there will always be books on the shelf that you might not agree with as a parent, as an individual, but they're there for someone else. They serve the information needs of someone else, and they deserve a place on the shelf. You know, no one ever asks anyone to accept everything you read, but we believe in the ability to read it and make up one's own mind about it. We think that's foundational to our democratic society, foundational expression of our rights under the First Amendment, something that library workers and educators across the country fiercely defend, that freedom to read that we should hold so close and protect so fiercely, because we're one of the few societies that offer that to their residents across the board.
Do you think there should be different standards between what books might be banned in school libraries versus public libraries?
I believe that we do have to recognize that school libraries don't have the same resources as public libraries, nor as broad a mission. But I do believe that school libraries should be able to serve the information needs of the students they're serving. And particularly in high school libraries, there's often a need to address topics not addressed in the classroom, or offer resources on topics not addressed in the classroom. And we often hear that particularly books dealing with gender identity, sexual orientation, can be life-saving for students who are grappling with those issues, who are feeling bullied or excluded, who are having educational difficulties. Finding books that reflect their lives and experiences on the shelf can improve literacy, improve educational outcomes, and really lead to a far better result for them in the long run. And the students themselves are telling us that. So banning broad categories of books based on a particular parent or group's moral or political objections to that topic is not serving the needs of everyone in the community. And the public school library in particular should be able to do that.
Deborah, do you think that there can be common ground here? You know, the books can be made available, but maybe require adult permission or notification when there's an issue with certain books in schools?
I believe that there should be mechanisms in place for a parent to communicate with a librarian or an educator about their choices and to have that respected. I can't think of a single school district these days that doesn't have a policy in place that allows a parent to ask for substitute materials in the classroom or ask that their student not be lent books that they disapprove of. And again, as I said, we support that. The problem is that applying broad restrictions can really be an issue, especially for older readers. We should be thoughtful about what mechanisms we use to restrict their access. We know from no less of authority than Justice Scalia that young people have First Amendment rights and that they should be able to exercise them and exercise choices around them. But of course, as always, you know, parents should be able to talk to the librarian or the educator and have their wishes respected.
Deborah Caldwell Stone with the American Library Association, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Lisa. It's been great to talk.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Dr. Rebecca Grant.
What's on your mind?
It's nice to shock China once in a while. And that's what happened December 2nd when the Air Force rolled out its super-secret new B-21 Raider bomber in Palmdale, California. This $600 million aircraft is the first new bomber in 34 years. It's been kept under tight wraps and not even a blurry sketch leaked out. This isn't just another airplane, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin said at the unveiling. It's a testament to our strategy of deterrence. China fired back fast, calling the B-21 a, quote, propaganda sample. Fact is, China and Russia have nothing like the B-21 Raider. The sneak peek carefully showed only the front of the B-21, keeping its trailing edge under wraps for now, hiding some of the bomber's stealth features. With extreme security and impressive theatrical lighting, Northrop Grumman waited until twilight on a foggy, damp evening for the ceremony. A B-52, a B-1, and a B-2 bomber flew low over the hangar, and then out came the B-21. I was there, and wow, the B-21 is a strikingly beautiful aircraft. Engines, fuel, and weapons are all tucked inside a kite-shaped center body. The B-21 looks like both the older B-2 Spirit stealth bomber and several newer unmanned drones. It's a flying wing, so there's no long fuselage like in airliners or fighter jets. It's a stealth bomber. Radar air defenses made by Russia and China require steady, high-rate tracking of a plane to shoot at it. A stealth aircraft like the B-21 messes up the radar wave return, so the crew aiming the missile can't get a fire control lock. You won't see it coming, you won't see it going. Print the B-21 coffee mug now. Still, China will try everything they can to counter this aircraft and to break into our systems to discover its secrets, warned Congressman Rob Whitman. The B-21 is needed because the global nuclear threat projection is getting so scary. China is building new nuclear missile fields. North Korea wants a nuclear missile that can reach the USA. As for Russia, nuclear is tied with Nazi as Putin's favorite word, and arms control is in a coma. The B-21 is a boon to the nuclear deterrence triad. Yes, missiles and submarines are important, but it's the bombers that keep adversaries guessing. Russia or China or whoever simply can't count on tracking all the B-21s. That means America can always hold crucial targets at risk, and that keeps deterrence working. I'm Rebecca Grant for Fox News.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.